Welcome to Dweller of the Dark. We are a channel honoring the yellowed and blackened bones of many prominent authors. We will be digging up several obscure, strange, and forgotten authors who influenced many of the great horror, science fiction, and fantasy writers today. More tales of the horrifying, obscure, strange, and forgotten are climbing out of the tombs. Subscribe, comment, like, donate, or I'll send Thaddeus Forge to steal your heathen soul. Unknown horror masters, send us ghoulish delights for the Skull and Bones collection. Your pound of writer's flesh will continue to feed our ghouls for now. Books, websites, podcast in the links below. Children of Horror, Legion of Ghouls, tonight. Skinwalker by Thomas Swafford. Chapter 3, A Missing Tourist. It had been weeks since the first horrific murders. Each booze-infused night, trying to sleep, I saw the splatter of blood. Each dawn, my head would pound as if a steel drum was crashing in my skull. On the less fortunate nights, when I didn't sleep through my epic benders, I'd wake and scream, recalling the images of a ripped-apart skull oozing gray matter. Other times, I might jolt up to punch out, nearly cracking my poor wife. In those recollections, I was fighting off a hulking, wolfish thing with red eyes and blood-dripping claws. Razor talons would rip into me, doing their worst to bone, sinew, and flesh. How even now, I still wake remembering the coppery pungent scent of my blood. I'd shudder hearing and seeing the buzz of flies on my dead corpse, then retch and gag smelling the sulfurous odor of rot. God be damned, I still hate those memories. While I was perusing old county reports in one of my less than festive moods, and debunking the story of Two Horse having killed a pregnant woman while at his college campus, the phone rang ominously. I winced, knowing somehow, on a level I never have been able to explain, this was probably not going to be the Girl Scouts asking me to buy coconut cookies. "Sheriff, I got a missing tenant," the owner of Boomtown Saloon had advised on a dour and rare rain-swept evening. I rubbed my temples, recalling it had been a few weeks after my conversation with my deputy John. The well-preserved, overly painted, blonde-wigged Lucky McAfee, the owner, wanted to report a missing person. "This young fella by the name Jeremy Bond hasn't come back from the old Spanish Trail, and might I add, he hasn't checked out." "That happens a lot at the Boomtown, Lucky. Drifters drift in like a tumbleweed and then drift out," I grumbled, trying to chew through rather than sip my bitter brew. "What makes this one so special?"
"Yeah, well, Sheriff, they usually take all their stuff and their wheels,"
Lucky huffed, tapped a nail, and rambled on as I cracked my stiff neck.
"Besides, Jeremy didn't strike me as the loose-as-a-goose type. He wasn't like the rest of my fine, law-abiding patrons that frequent this relic of the American Southwest."
"I hate to tell you, Lucky, I noticed most of your patrons aren't exactly prized flocks." I moved my notepad in front of me and clicked a pen to write. "Give me a description, and I'll put my best man on the case."
"You mean your only good man, Sheriff Dale Hughes?"
I bristled as Lucky launched the proverbial barb. Of course, she'd know who was good and not so much
in this one-horse desert town, especially since the Boomtown Saloon was also the only off-the-books brothel from here to Scottsdale, except for maybe Tijuana. I leaned forward with a scowl. You going to keep snickering, Lucky, or give me details on your missing boarder? Lucky quieted down and went to detailing Jeremy Bond as I wrote, committing everything she said to memory.
I reckon he's in his mid-20s with chestnut eyes and wavy, rocker-style blonde hair.
She paused, recalling I was guessing. After an awkward minute of silence, I prodded her to continue. Go on. I took another sip of my chewy, tar-colored syrup. How about a little more on the description so my best deputy doesn't arrest Ozzy Osbourne or worse, Bret Michaels?
The day I ask you to search for the lead singer of Poison, you can shoot me where I stand.
Lucky grumbled, and I obliged. I would put her and Bret Michaels out of their misery. After a moment's laughter,
ha ha,
she continued as I rolled my eyes.
Tall as Brad Pitt, with the same innocent eyes. Does that help, sir?
I agreed it did, as she went on cackling like a wayward hen.
Jeremy paid cash and rented the room for the whole week. The boy said he was recording videos for his nature channel on social media. Is that a thing these kids are doing these days on YouTube or whatever?
It's a thing, I guess, Lucky. Some of these desert wanderers make damn good money videoing wildlife and ancient ruins, but nowhere near the cash as the owner of a broth, I mean a fine proprietor like yourself, of a derelict hotel. I heard over the phone Lucky fidgeting and her false teeth chattering. By the sound of things, I had ruffled the hen's feathers with my hint of her impropriety.
Good to know, Sheriff.
Lucky deflected the awkward moment. She went on to explain what had caused her ears and eyes to perk up and notice something amiss.
3 days went by, and the cleaning girls noticed his room had been untouched. 2 more days, it was the same. I could see Jeremy going out on a few days trekking, but it's 5 days. And he wasn't exactly packed to go camping more than 2, Sheriff Hughes.
That uneasy feeling of knowing in my gut that Lucky was coyoting around to her bigger concern was aggravating. But no matter, the truth was what it was.
It wasn't a case that he just left without paying his bill. Pressed, folded, and clothes still in the drawers. Everything in his room was pristine. Jeremy hadn't wet a towel and left everything in his room untouched. I swear, when you see the room, you'd attest that he had just checked in, Dale, and left to go eat or look around town.
Maybe it was an overnight stay, Lucky. I took a slow sigh and looked out my window to a dwindling red sun.
No way, Sheriff.
Lucky disagreed with a groan as she repositioned the phone.
He had brought enough clothes to indicate it wasn't an overnight stay. Hell, he told Buddy, my desk clerk, that he would probably be in town for about a week. I don't know why it's bugging me, Dale, but it's bugging me nonetheless.
Maybe he got turned around in the Badlands. It happens a lot this time of the year. I continued to look out my dirty window at a swaying cactus in the breeze. On the horizon, a storm cloud was approaching.
I got the feeling he had a lot more sense about him than your average hiker, Dale. And by the way, it's not often the Boomtown Saloon gets such a polite and educated young man.
I heard Lucky go back to tapping that ingratiating nail of hers
on what I was guessing her desk.
When he hadn't come back after 2 days, I got worried and reported him missing to you fine folks.
Obviously, since I'm having to call you directly, Sheriff, no one followed up.
Any place in particular he was heading besides the trail? Could he have been thinking about looking for that lost Spanish gold up there? I grimaced on the word gold. Too many fools had ended up on the wrong side of the desert, going out there half-cocked and most certainly unarmed.
He told me he wanted to go out to Thunder Bluff and sightsee. I advised him the flash floods on the way out to Old Spanish Trail might make things dicey. He laughed for some reason when I said dicey.
I heard her rock forward in her chair.
Anyway, Jeremy assured me he wouldn't be doing anything foolish and be right back by nightfall. That's the last time I saw him.
Thunder Bluff, you say, by way of Old Spanish Trail? She agreed. That was his course. Your nature lover was treasure hunting. That's the same course Pecos Pete took when he disappeared, as well as a few other serious prospectors. I heard Lucky groan.
Oh dear, Dale. I didn't even realize that. I had so much going on. Meal orders and a grifter trying to steal a man's watch. When he was asking, did I send?
It's not your fault. These prospectors always think they have the upper hand, especially the academics. But that desert is one mean mother. I interrupted. Lucky was a lot of things, but getting people killed wasn't one of them. She'd lose sleep over this if I didn't get a handle on it. She was a rarity, a madam with a conscience. All you did was point him directions and warn him. This adventurous young guy did the rest.
Well, if it helps find him alive, Dale, I tracked his credit card.
Lucky added in almost a mumble. How many times had we been down this road with missing patrons? Neither of us could count. Most ended up okay, but there were some that didn't turn up so well. It helps as always, Lucky. I'll get my guys on it and bring in search and rescue. I assured her, but 5 days missing in the desert and lightly packed wasn't boding well for Jeremy Bond being safe and sound. I also told my deputies what Jeremy Bond was seen driving. A 1995 Blue Plymouth Colt with an Arizona State University sticker on the back windshield. I gave them a picture of Jeremy in our briefing with SAR. It was a less than flamboyant picture of Jeremy that Lucky had kindly parted with as she shed tears and a sniffle. He had a giant, Brad Pitt-sized grin, with his arms around a blonde-haired, blue-eyed, real knuckle-dragging hooker. The girl, I recalled, had a deformed breast and had nicknamed herself, coincidentally or not, Eileen. The picture had been posted on the guest wall to showcase the lively parties at Boomtown Saloon. Formerly, we asked around town as SAR searched the ravines and desert. Informally, after a day of searching, I knew things weren't looking good, and this was most likely body retrieval. By day 3 of our search, I followed up with John on Jeremy Bond's next of kin. Immediate next of kin and his background particulars were running us in circles, which got me to wondering if Jeremy Bond wasn't an alias. I followed up with Scottsdale PD and surrounding counties with a picture to see if anyone had any leads on Jeremy's possible real identity. It was on the early morning of the 4th day of our search when John called in. Sheriff, we found something.
in a curving ravine shaped like a bull's horn and 50 miles south of Old Spanish Trail, Bond's car was found. It was covered in yellow and blaze orange dust. All four tires on the Plymouth were flat. It was as if Jeremy had ran over something sharp, but nothing to inflict that kind of damage was found. There were no signs of Jeremy Bond anywhere in the vicinity. I cautioned the team as they searched. Be mindful out there. We have all seen people get turned around, especially with the tires blown or the car not starting. According to witnesses, Jeremy Bond seemed pretty sharp and was good with a map. My auxiliary deputy, a leathered cowboy in his mid-60s, Bosco Temple, chimed to no one's surprise.
If he was so good with a map, he'd be at the Boomtown Saloon right now for happy hour with Eileen.
Bosco imitated Eileen's classic teapot leaning trick to make our tired searchers laugh a spell. He lightened all our moods a little as we began the rugged search into fiery hell for Jeremy Bond. All right, enough. I quieted the laughter and got my team's head back into the search. Bosco and the rest of you, keep this always in the back of your minds when you are saddling up and hiking about in the Badlands. Expertly prepared people have gone out here and disappeared. When you are searching, never ever forget that flash flooding from the highlands, rattlesnakes, rock slides, or falls into a gorge have happened not just to the people we search for, but to us as well. John added in, Sheriff Hughes is right, folks. Jeremy Bond is a clear case of what happens if you think you have the desert figured out. Anything can and does happen out here. As for finding him, Saar and the sheriff say the probability is high that he'll be close to the car, dead or alive. Sheriff, don't you find it odd how we found the car? Bosco pointed to the adjusted seat. Bond was 5 feet and 10 inches. I noticed that the seat was adjusted for someone larger, Bosco. I looked over toward John and the rest of our misfit team on horseback. That's the other concern I have while we are beating around scrub pines and rattlesnakes. I think someone else brought this car out here. There were no prints, not even Jeremy Bond's, which is concerning. So, we may have someone out here who didn't have the best intentions for Jeremy or may not want to be found. Make sure you stay with your group and report anything unusual. In the second week of the search, just when I was about to call it off, the mutilated body of Jeremy Bond was found. The corpse was located 50 miles away from where his car was discovered. It was sheer luck as Bosco found him. My deputy went to take a whiz off the edge of a gorge. As he unzipped, he caught a silver glint of something. That shining glimmer would later turn out to be Jeremy's belt buckle. Apparently, his body had been ripped apart, then tossed like useless trash down into a red sandstone crevice in the state park area. This was a less frequented and rugged part of the trailhead, miles from the main thoroughfare. Why hadn't the killer buried the body or concealed it better? Who was to say? But burying anything in a cavernous ravine or bluff is nigh impossible. The ground is fixed solid as cement. The sandstone was so hard to crack with a pickaxe, much less dig, that it made burial a real bitch. As John, Bosco, and the team walked up on Jeremy, I thought the tears to the flesh had been made after death. It was inconceivable to believe otherwise. Surely predation from hungry desert cougars or rats had gnawed on him after death. But the blood splatter and entrails at the jagged crag where Jeremy had been launched from, told a different story. John asked as I studied the scene with forensics, "Do you think he came here to look at the local scenery and was killed?" "I suspect he was following up on some old Spanish treasure map he had secured or borrowed from Arizona State University Historical Archives." I saw John's face look puzzled. "Scottsdale PD gave me a follow-up on him, Deputy. I thought his name was an alias, but lo and behold, his name really was Jeremy Bond." I stooped to wave off flies covering a piece of Jeremy's liver, then continued. "Before he came out to the Badlands to get carved up, he was a teaching assistant over at ASU. I reckon he caught gold fever stumbling onto an archive map to his obvious peril." "Well, that covers the victim. Now, to the real question, Sheriff. Who did it?" John wiped sweat from his brow and took off his hat to wave away flies. "That's what I'm wondering myself, Deputy." I turned from the entrails as forensics continued bagging. I walked with John and some of the team to look out on the vista and point in the direction we found the Plymouth Colt. The murderer moved his car 50 miles south of us, obviously to throw us off their trail so we wouldn't find the body. Whatever he tangled with clawed him up pretty good, but it was a blow in the back of the head that might have finished him off. I just don't know if the killing blow was a result of being launched out 200 feet below to the canyon, or while he was up here fighting for his life from this maniac. At any rate, forensics and the coroner over in the next county have a better facility to figure that out.
Okay, that question is out of the way. But my next question.
I raised a skeptical brow and pursed my lips, knowing John's next inquiry.
Do you think anyone out on the reservation did this? I mean, this is a remote, rugged landscape that your average day hiker or camper doesn't come out to.
I don't know, John. With a few exceptions, and you know the who. I don't think it would have been a Navajo, at least not a traditional one. I adjusted my hat and side-glanced as the rest of the team headed out of the canyon for home. Adjusting my sunshades, I mentioned to my deputy out of earshot of the others, "Traditional Navajo have a great fear of dead bodies. That goes triple for a ghost of the dead." John added as we ushered forward into the growing shadows of the Redstone Canyon and to our horses.
"I heard that before, Sheriff Hughes, that if someone is about to die, they put their shoes on the wrong feet and take them outside. The dead aren't supposed to be able to walk back into the home to haunt it."
I nodded to John as we both mounted up to head back to the horse truck. As I turned my horse north, I added, "Yes, sir, that's true, Deputy. That goes double for an evil person who dies. Something about the ghost evil can latch onto them. The Navajo avoid these evil dead at all cost."
Riding alongside me on his Appaloosa horse, John narrowed his eyes and furrowed his brow. Just as we made the final turn to reach flatland, a gust of wind provided us a little reprieve from the sweltering heat.
"You're right, Dale. A Navajo wouldn't have transported a body. But you damn well know as I do, a Navajo witch wouldn't have had a problem with it."
A few days later, I got two reports back on Jeremy Bond. The first was the neighboring Scottsdale Medical Examiner's pathology report on the remains. The other was a stolen Indian artifacts investigation from a detective three counties to the west of us. The latter detailed exactly why Jeremy Bond was spending a week in our quaint little town. Both reports glaringly red-flagged one of our denizens accordingly. the mounting evidence shifting to the point to head in that same someone's direction time and again. The wind rattled a few loose shingles on Joe Two Horses' place as I drove up cautiously. The place was a ransacked shack about 12 miles out of town. John was with me with our other deputies on standby if there was trouble. And with this bad hombre, there was always something. Both of us were strapped to the nines and wearing full bulletproof protection to be safe. I could hear John groan and itch as he adjusted his bulletproof vest and cup protector for his family jewels. At this point, neither of us were taking chances. Had Two Horse always flittered on the fringe with me like a nagging, blood-sucking horsefly? Sure he had. Had there been more questions than answers on people that had crossed him? Of course. There had always been a smoke cloud of trouble around him. But it was one thing to speculate, to suspect, and to postulate a probability. It was another to finally have the Navajo witch linked to a murder. And knowing what he was, or so I thought what he pretended to be, made things so much worse down the trail. I kept the engine running on the police Suburban and parked the vehicle about 60 feet from Two Horses' door. I nodded over to John as we climbed out of the vehicle swiftly. Two Horse walked out of his door slowly, with his eyes fixed casually on me. He strode without a care in the world as he came out to meet us. "What brings you out here, Sheriff?" Two Horse slightly lowered his head with a leering smile. His devilish grin radiated his usual arrogance. "Oh, me and my deputy were out on a stroll in the Badlands. I thought I'd stop by and smell the flowers." I watched as the Navajo witch continued to grin. He wasn't grinning for long. "It's funny. I have this case that's bugging me. Maybe you could help me and my partner here clear it up." "I'm always obliged to help out the brave officer of the law in my town, Sheriff Hughes." He stood 20 feet from me and John and crossed his arms, annoyed. "I'm glad a fine citizen like yourself is willing to help." I nodded politely to him, but inside I wanted to blow his head off. In fact, I prayed when I dropped my cards on him, he'd give me a reason to. "This shouldn't take long to wrap up, Two Horse. I'm sure you heard about that tourist that went missing a month ago near Old Spanish Trail." Two Horse cocked his head slightly and scoffed. "That's what happens when Bilagana go messing around in Indian country. He probably got lost or fell off a cliff." "It's curious you said he fell off a cliff, Two Horse." I locked my steel eyes on him. The man didn't flinch an inch, but he winced just a slight second when I played my next card. "Actually, we found him." "I knew you'd save the day as you always do, Sheriff Hughes." Two Horse turned to walk back inside his home. He put a waving hand to send us off. "Send my regards to Jeremy. I hope he has a speedy recovery." "That's the thing. I didn't tell you his name. And we didn't find him alive either. Murdered, you see, Two Horse." I watched the vile man stop. Then I saw him lower and shake his head. I could have sworn in the instant that he might have chuckled. "The medical examiner said that after he was dead, someone cut out parts of his body, took out some bone and other things. Any idea why someone would do that?"
"How would I know?"
Two Horse turned back coolly and calmly, as if annoyed by my intrusive questions. He fixed his eyes on mine.
"I'm not in the mind reading business, Sheriff.
I'm in construction, not police work. Like Freddie Prinze used to say, not my job, man.
I pay your salary, that's your job.
Actually, the public good is everyone's responsibility, especially if you are the local witch doctor or whatever it is they call your kind.
John broke in with a discourteous growl. I'm pretty sure he was enjoying taunting, too harsh to react.
Hell, I was getting a kick seeing Jeremy Bond's alleged killer squirm. I guess this is the part where I toss some chicken bones and conjure up a spirit guide to help you solve the case, Sheriff Hughes.
I'll help you the day you get off your lard ass and pick up a pickaxe to crack some rock for a new road.
Duhorse growled petulantly.
Unfazed, I pressed Duhorse further to ruffle him up.
So, you knew the Billigana by name. That don't bode well for you, Duhorse.
Duhorse shrugged as he replied with a yawn.
I must have read his name in the newspaper or something.
I haven't seen you in town in a month.
The paper doesn't run this far out in the desert. Try to recall again, if you don't mind.
I cracked my neck and raised my right brow.
I'd say you were pretty observant, Sheriff Hughes.
Duhorse looked up to the blue midday sky and then slowly back to me and John.
Maybe it was at the First Nations Library on the internet. I believe the papers get dropped there, and the internet speed in the place is, well, killer.
Come on, Duhorse. You're fibbing, my friend.
I gave my own knowing, leering smile. Grimacing, I added,
this detective friend of mine did some work on a case out near ASU. It was a strange case of a pregnant girl 20 years ago getting beaten pretty bad by an Indian sports star. Her name was Carla.
Why?
I swear I heard Duhorse stammer a moment when I said the name Carla. As in Carla Bond, mother to the late ripped-apart Jeremy Bond. A simmering fire of disbelief lit in Tuhorse's deadly, nervous eyes. It was the final trump card played. I had cast the last die to let Tuhorse know I had him cornered like a caged wolf.
Carla was Jeremy Bond's mother.
My face tightened with disgust. I knew the renegade had most likely killed the boy, not knowing who he had killed. But all of it was circumstantial at best. No way I could pin the murder on him just yet. But rattling his cage served just as useful.
Worse for you, it seems she went to the same college as you did while playing ball.
Oh, at the same time, I might add.
So, I went to college at the same time with this Carla chick. Big deal, Sheriff Hughes. And you know, it is all circumstantial. Whatever you are concocting to frame me, that's a reach even for you.
Duhorse huffed indignantly.
A lot of people were there who could have knocked her up. It was a big school, a lot of balls bouncing, especially mine, and a long time ago. I can't remember everyone I may or may not have met 20 years ago.
I watched Duhorse, looking about nervously as he wiped the ever so slightest sweat off his brow. In the moment, though, the Navajo witch appeared to have aged decades.
Let's cut the bullshit, shall we? I adjusted my hat to cut the glare of the sun beaming down on us. You got drunk, knocked up, beat the mother of your unborn child nearly to death. Sure, you were thrown out of school, but that should have been the least that happened to you. But it's not all your fault about what happened. I can tell by the look on your face. Carla never told you she was pregnant.
I have no clue what you mean, Sheriff Hughes.
But the tremble in Tuhorse's voice echoed plenty.
I know you won't fess up to anything, Duhorse.
It's not in your nature. But at least we can clear the air about your murdered son. I sunk my own teeth into the wretch to finish our conversation. Damn, it would take a real month.
Arrest me or get the hell out of here, Dale Hughes. I've had enough of this fucking harassment by you and your cronies.
Two Hawks roared in outrage. It was the first time I'd ever seen him lose control of himself. It would not be the last, unfortunately. We aren't arresting you today. You have enough to process, from what I'm gathering. I glanced over to John, who nodded back as I drove the knife a little further into the despicable killer's heart. I don't blame Carla for not telling you. You worked her over pretty good back in the day. What woman, after that kind of beatdown, would want to raise a kid with you?
Not that I give a rat's ass, Sheriff Hughes, because I didn't know her. What happened to her?
I saw something for an instant that shocked the absolute hell out of me. Two Horses' eyes welled with tears. Seizing the opportunity to reach at some remnant of Two Horses' humanity, I finished the rest of my tale to him as John looked over at me in disbelief. Carla Bond left school not long after you were given the boot from ASU. She worked her ass off at 3 secretarial jobs to raise her beautiful and super bright son by herself. Naturally, her parents helped out to make sure neither were ever without wants. Carla never, ever told Jeremy who his father was. I'm figuring Jeremy solved the mystery of his heritage while combing through the archives at ASU on his treasure hunt. I took a long, controlled breath, wanting to unholster my .45 and putting two into this loathsome swine's skull. I opted for the other option, to really fuck him up. Carla Bond died alone of cancer 2 months ago in a pool of blood and rot. Jeremy came home to find her. She left a note confirming Jeremy's suspicions on his dad's identity. You, motherfucker. Screaming, with tears dropping from his cruel eyes, Two Horse went to threaten me. It was a huge mistake. Say I'm this kid's dad again, and I'll... My backhand cracked soundly, with Two Horse's skull knocking the man back and to the ground. I watched blood pour from his mouth into a pool between his legs. You'll do what? Fucking useless bastard. I can't pin you murdering your own kid, fucktard. Accidental murder or not. But I can get you on threatening an officer of the law. Go on and threaten me. You should have been a blowjob fucking Indian. I raged at him uncontrollably. Even John was taken aback by my backhand and out of control use of every profanity in the book at this heartless scumbag. It's time to go, Sheriff Hughes. John pulled my arm to wake me out of my fury. Shaking my head as I spit at Two Horses' feet, I saw the Navajo witch smile up at me as he wiped blood off his mouth. I added as I was leaving, Jeremy told his grandparents he had a right to know who his father was. He made up the whole stolen relics trade to entice you to get to know him. I guess he found out what kind of man you really are when lied to or crossed, eh? Two Horse.
I'm no man, Sheriff Hughes, as you might have suspected.
I watched him groggily try to stand up. Then he added to both John and my confused disbelief.
I'm a cursed dog, destined to screw up and kill everything that ever loved me or would love me.
I climbed into the cruiser and waited for John to climb in. I yelled at the swaying fool, not knowing if he heard my last words. Jeremy, your dead son, told the Bonds that this man had probably regretted what he had done to Mama. Maybe, meeting him, you'd become a better person. Silas 2J, Jeremy's best friend, stated he was coming out here to see his biological father on a bogus stolen relics deal. Same thing Silas told the detective looking into his case back over in Scottsdale when he didn't show up to teach his Native American class at ASU. So, my last question to you, what happens when a Navajo witch kills a half Navajo, his full son, out in the Badlands? John and I waited to see what Two Horse would do or say. The Navajo witch said nothing and turned toward his home. At the creaking screen door, he yelled back dismissively as he walked inside.
Well, I don't know what to tell you, Sheriff Hughes, other than you land a mean backhand. I'll say again, I don't remember her. And like Michael Jackson would say, if he were still alive, the kid was not my son.
I thought for a moment of drumming up some charges like resisting arrest. Then I thought again of firing a filed off drop pistol and killing him on the spot. John wouldn't give a damn if I did so. Hell, the whole town might celebrate Two Horse being gunned down like the rabid cur he had been. But my godforsaken conscience got in the way. Had I acted that day and done the wrong thing for the right reasons, how many lives would have been spared?
He killed his own kid, Dale. Let that sink in. He didn't know it, of course, but something about the way the kid looked or acted should have tipped Two Horse off that the kid wasn't a totally white kid.
John muttered the obvious as we drove on through the yellowish-gray dust clouds of the desert. I know, John. I have to tell you the God's honest truth. The hardest part of my day today was walking away and not putting a bullet in him. I bit my lower lip, tasting the coppery salt of my own bleeding lip. I confessed as the penitent to a pious priest and to the one person in the department that totally understood what we were up against. I winced as John asked the strangest of questions.
How does his next ritual play out?
What do you mean, his next ritual? Do you think killing Jeremy Bond was more than a business deal going bad? I glanced over as we made the turn onto the highway headed into town. John rubbed the grit off his face with his blue handkerchief.
I think he was getting what he needed for one of his black magic ceremonies. The stolen relic deal with Jeremy was a clever way to lure him out to kill him. I guess each was deceiving the other, but obviously for totally different reasons.
Yeah, one wanted to finally connect with his Navajo dad, the other to eat his liver in some witch's brew. I seethed in outrage, wishing once again I had killed Two Horse.
Like I said, Dale, traditional Navajo wouldn't mess with a dead body. But look at where we left. And look out to where we found that poor boy.
John pointed out to the same bluff off Old Spanish Trail where we had found the dead boy.
Both locations have some symbolism to Two Horse and his family dating back to his great uncle, Bujo Benally. This is where the Navajo witches have always lived. Nobody else in the family wanted this land because it was thought to be haunted by evil spirits. So, Bujo Benally gladly laid claim over all. Phantoms, demons, wraiths, all manners of harbingers of evil that wicked bastard communicated with. And now Two Horse is most likely in league with the spirits of the dead and other things too. Didn't he practically confess to it?
John, you heard that fucking maniac. He said, I'm no man, Sheriff Hughes. As you might have suspected, I'm a cursed dog destined to screw up and kill everything that ever loved me or would love me. I rubbed my left temple and paused, looking at the blood. Two horses' blood dried on my hand. I wonder if all these things Two Horse believes in, evil spirits, black magic, skinwalkers, and of course demons, could be worse than him.
I don't know, Dale. Let's hope we never find out.
John shrugged as both of us looked out upon the blood-red glow of a setting Arizona sun.
Thank you for listening. Have a great night.